Well, Linda Moulton Howe is also quite an authority on crop formations, animal mutilations as well. Now, you've heard what she's been talking about tonight, so we'll take your phone calls. And if you're a whistleblower as well, check in with us because she actually follows up on all your questions and comments. We'll be back in a moment with Conversations with Linda on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Conversations with Linda. Linda, did you have that final comment? Did you need to finish that up?
Yes, thank you. It is about cycles and that this intelligence or intelligences that we seem to be dealing with on this planet, not just in the 21st century or the 20th century, but perhaps for thousands and thousands of years that there's been interaction, and there appear to be periods in which there is more focus and then less. These cycles, and that what Jose Arguelles was talking about in the Mayan factor is that the Mayans themselves were obsessed with cycles, mathematical cycles, and the cycles that now, as we look toward the winter solstice a year from now in December of 2012, that big 5,125 cycle that is on that stone calendar, it will come to a close and something new will come. And that is perhaps one of the main pieces in trying to understand what we're dealing with. Geographic cycles, cycles having to do with the magnetic fields of this planet, cyclic monitoring, and cyclic interactions that may or may not be directly related to what humans are doing. And I want to thank a good friend of mine, a fellow writer, Peter Robbins, because he introduced me through email to Pat Colligan, and then we talked. And Peter had met him when he was down doing some of the Roswell events as a conference coordinator in Roswell the past couple of years. And that's where he met Pat Colligan. And Peter had been a co-author of that book, Left at Eastgate, about the RAF Bentwaters mystery that I, too, have spent so much time trying to understand. And when you get into the RAF Bentwaters mystery, you're into another question about why was that base the focus for a very long time of all kinds of spooky aerial phenomena. The base had a spooky history, just like Roswell now has a spooky history. And Pat Colligan encountered one of those gigantic spooky craft. And I hope that out there, that there are other Pat Colligans who maybe they've been afraid to talk and go on the record, as Pat Colligan and Pat Murphy were before we did interviews. And then during the interviews or after the interview, they decided, no, I'm going to go on the record. And in fact, Pat Colligan, George, went to his supervisor at the state prison and said, look, I've been sitting on this. I haven't talked to anybody about this publicly. I want to do this. I want to know if other people have had any kind of an experience down here like this. Has anybody else seen this huge thing? And the state prison administrator said it was fine. So maybe we are getting to a point where if this is not so threatening even to administrators. And excuse me, when it's in the winter, I always have this problem with coughing and sinuses, and I apologize. It just goes with the territory of having a lot of allergies. But I hope if there are others in our Earth Files and Coast audiences who have had similar, like large craft or beam or entity or any other encounters with what I call high strangeness, that you will email me at earthfiles@earthfiles.com. I always honor all requests for confidentiality. I had done so with Pat Murphy and Pat Colligan, and they decided they would go on the record with their names, which is always the best. And I hope as we move into 2012 that more and more people will tell the truth, especially governments.
Linda, one of my concerns has been science manipulating Mother Nature. And sure enough, the U.S. government's concerned about, I believe, Dutch scientists that have genetically altered the avian flu virus. And this one's called the H5N1. And you might want to look into that as one of your next reports, because our government is petrified that this information could get in the hands of the wrong people.
Well, it is a very serious issue. It starts out, it's a catch-22. Our government and other authorities and other nations wanted to know, if you, a scientist in a well-secure lab, can take the bird flu, the avian flu, and put it into something like ferrets that are well-known to match the transmission of viruses in humans and ferrets, and if they could do something that would sort of mimic, how would this avian virus turn into a more lethal virus that could be transmitted by air or fluids between humans? Now, they end up, two different teams in two different parts of the world, end up saying that they have been able to do this in ferrets. Well, that information then becomes both lethal if it gets out, lethal if somebody knows how to do it, because now the human population is vulnerable. But it is also the most valuable information to medical people who know how to study it, because the whole goal was, if we can mimic making the virus more transmissible, then we can learn how to block it and prevent a pandemic. So it is a double-edged sword that now exists in these labs.
Okay, let's go to our calls now, Linda. Jerry, truck driving in St. Louis, in our neck of the woods right now. Go ahead, Jerry.
Miss Linda, was there any reporting going on about any UFOs back in June in East St. Louis this year?
Well, when you say East St. Louis,
that's across the river
from Kansas City, Missouri.
It's about 250 miles.
But it's in that general area, and for 250 miles to one of these craft, I imagine
that's nothing.
It's half a second. So, for whatever are the reasons that Kansas City, Missouri, and that general area has been the focus of another one of these cycles of concentration by phenomena that is so highly strange. The more I have learned about what has been happening in Kansas City, Missouri, the more amazed I am. I've been able to publicly report about some of it, but not all of it. And it is the same question year after year, decade after decade. Why are certain parts of the world focused upon periodically by whatever this phenomena is? What are they doing and why? And I want to raise something interesting here, George. In part four that I'm going to do on Kitchener, Ontario, Canada, I'm going to show a series of fascinating photographs taken just in, I think it was December 12th. And it was as if whatever this phenomena is there also changed. And the photographs are quite different, but most striking is that in a series of six or seven, you see two of these, we'll call them glowing objects in the sky, interacting in as almost as if they have color codes. And one does one thing with color codes and another reacts with color and shape. And you, if you run the frames almost like a movie, you get the feeling that these two things are communicating back and forth. And then from the one that it seems to be the larger one, something drops. But this is not the only photographic series in which something is dropping straight down. And I have asked Greg Crane what could be out in that area where something appears to be dropping from one of these multicolored objects. And he had driven out there. He was curious himself. And I've got a map at Earth Files that shows the general area where he lives. And it's very near the great river there. And the issue that suddenly came into my mind and his, what if something's being dropped into river systems? What could be being dropped by a periodic, cyclic, other intelligence that is not human? And then comes this headline today, space ball drops on Namibia. And these strange metallic hollow balls, they have been found in...
It's happened before, yeah.
Yes, they've been found in South Africa and Australia and Latin America, both in the last two decades as well as going back centuries. Well, what in the world are these hollow metal balls being dropped from and why? And we don't have answers, but the more you ask these questions, I'm hoping that audiences will begin to join me and others with realizing that there is evidence of all kinds of interaction around this planet all of the time, and it is not just now. It has been going on for centuries.
Why haven't they told us about the other ones that they have found, Linda?
Well, there seems to be some kind, these policies of denial and the alleged interest of national security seem to place cups over so many subjects. And I don't know, there is something so odd about these hollow metallic spheres, and I have read about them before, and I know that there are very ancient spheres that have been found. They're not just 20 years old. Well, what is the past, present, and future relationship between the ancient hollow metal spheres and those that are being dropped in the last 20 years?
That's a bizarre story. Let's go to David, first-time caller in Honolulu. Hey, David, welcome to the show.
Hi, George. Thanks a bunch for having me.
Sure thing.
And thanks for visiting Honolulu several years ago. I got to see you in person once for your visit.
I enjoyed that.
Thank
it
you.
It was a fun time. Linda?
She's
talking to me, Linda.
Oh, I was there. He said Linda. Sorry.
Oh, thanks. I'm nervous, too. But this is my experience. This happened about 12 years ago. I think it was summer of 99. And I visited San Dimas, California, 1 week with my family while they were looking for, we were looking for houses to move into. My dad got a new job out there. That was the strange part. I was only in San Dimas for 1 week. The last night I was there, my visit, I witnessed what would be a UFO. And long story short, I saw it as a light in the sky and watched it come down with different flickering lights as it moved closer and closer to where I was. And then it got as close as about maybe 200 yards away at street level, about three or four stories up above the street. And it was flying directly down the street. But the thing that was so unnerving was that it didn't make any noise like a normal jet or a plane. And it had a dull grayish color. And it was roughly like an oval shape, like an egg almost, or, you know, a saucer even. But nobody else, there was a live bar across the street, and no one else seemed to notice it. I got scared and went inside before it got any closer, because I kind of thought that, I don't know, maybe it knew I was watching it. But my question is more that the thing that, that experience just made me kind of think that I was just kind of shown the truth about something, that no one could lie to me anymore about it.
Right.
But is it possible that that was just a military craft because I was in California? Or is it possible that it was a UFO? And should I be more concerned about that experience? And where can I look up more information about that?
Well, first of all, it sounds like you were the only person that was paying attention, which may mean that the phenomena was focused on you. This is another characteristic over decades in which there can be street corners or a bus or a boat or a lot of people someplace, and a craft of whatever shape comes down glowing. And the remarkable thing is there may be only one person who seems to be paying attention, who has some kind of telepathic interaction with whatever it is, and everybody else, all the other people at the site, are completely oblivious. And that suggests that it is the phenomena that is interacting with the human mind and minds, where yours is engaged and everybody else is turned off.
All right. Thank you. And David, good luck to you. Let's go to Brooke in Newport, Rhode Island. Hey, Brooke, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call, George, and Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you all.
I wanted to give Linda a quick update from my story last month, which mirrors the one in Kitchener. And I thought that was Kitchener, Idaho, but Linda said that's Kitchener, Ontario.
In Canada, yes.
Okay. All right. 2 weeks after I spoke with you last, I have a friend who lives in Pawtucket, which is north of Providence, Rhode Island. At approximately 7 o'clock on Saturday night, he saw 8 red lights in a circle, and these red lights took off individually in opposite directions, and the higher they got in the sky, they turned white.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He also saw this. He saw this phenomena last week, last Sunday. Now, last Sunday, speaking of last Sunday, I went out. I'm staying on College Hill here now, observing this phenomena. I went out to Thayer Street, and I actually reported this to a Brown University police officer who saw the strange light, which people seen. You had a caller last night that from New York, I think, that said he's seeing low stars. The first thing out of the police officer's mouth was, "That is not a star."
Right.
And that he was extremely nice. He did not ridicule me at all. He said he could not believe what he was seeing. And he said there's something rotating in it. He right. gave me his name, his phone number, and he told me to contact him at any point that I saw this going on. And he heavily questioned me as to how long I've been seeing this phenomena here. Now, what I saw with the police officer was a long cigar-shaped craft, and it seemed to have an arrow at the top, but something was rotating within it. Then, when I left the police officer after 20 minutes and I was walking back home up the hill, the arrow was facing the lower part of this cigar-shaped vehicle. And then I saw 8 of them up in the sky near the moon.
Well, are you looking at them just with your eye, or did you have binoculars?
No, I actually had my long-distance glasses on, and I am going to get a telescope in here, and we're also going to do some video, and we're going to send it to you.
Okay, good.
Because we don't know what's going on here, and we don't know how to explain this, but like the guy from Kitchener, we have observed the 3 lights forming a triangle within the sky.
Right.
We've observed that phenomena also, but I thought the red light one, that one, I don't know how you could explain that as a government craft. I mean, that one is just mind-boggling to
right.
me. That one I didn't see. My friend Phil saw that one.
Well, I look forward to seeing your video and your photos, and thank you.
Very good. And, Linda, we're going to come back with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM with final phone calls. Some of you might have seen the UFO over Kansas City, of course, that was on a flatbed truck. And being hauled through the city, everybody went crazy over it, and it turned out to be a drone of some type. Oh, well. We'll be back with more phone calls with Linda Moulton Howe on Coast to Coast AM. Ah, yes, and you're listening to the world's greatest radio show, thanks to you, our incredible staff, that they just never seem to stop working, and contributors like Linda Moulton Howe and the special guests that we have on for you. And it has been my pleasure and privilege to have served you over these years as we continue into 2012 in not too long. It's just amazing, is it not? Tomorrow night on Coast to Coast, I will have our pre-Christmas program. As you know, Christmas Eve and Christmas Day will fall on Saturday and Sunday, and we'll have live shows for you. But we'll have a pre-Christmas program with you tomorrow, plus some special miracle open lines on Coast to Coast AM. When we come back in just a moment with Linda Moulton Howe, we'll take final phone calls in just a moment. Can you believe, Linda, we're going into 2012?
Yes, I can. And I personally don't think that anything really tremendously dramatic from a cosmic point of view is going to happen in 2012. I think 2012 is the phase out of some kind of cycle, and something new will start, and maybe it's the years after 2012 that it will be very, very dramatic.
All right, let's go back to the calls. John is in the Bronx, and he's on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, John. Thanks.
Hi, George. How are you? Linda, how you doing?
Hi.
Happy holidays to everyone. Yeah, I'd like to ask you about the Pat Culligan sighting. Do you think that there could have been inhabitants on board that craft? And also, what do you think the similarities between the Philadelphia experiment and that particular sighting that Pat Culligan had could have been?
Well, there are two very different issues from my point of view. I can take the last one first from a firsthand discussion I had with a man in Colorado. It's a long story, and I'll just compress it. It has to do with a man who was serving in Colorado who talked with somebody that I know. And he talked about growing up in Washington with his mother, who worked in the Pentagon, and this was around 1952. And he was a teenager, and back then they had microfilm that you would put in the machines, and they would have to be manually wound. And he was a teenager who got a summer job through his mother to do the microfilm winding. And my friend heard him tell the story of being a young teenager sitting at the microfilm viewer when a woman came in uniform with a man who was in uniform, and he had a lot of gold on his shoulders. They asked him to pull out a certain number file. So he put the reel on. They told him what frame section to go down to. And the first thing that he saw was the profile of a ship. And he heard them talking about the Philadelphia, that this was the ship in the Philadelphia Naval Yard. And then they asked him for another frame, and it was a half profile of a disc, like a UFO flying saucer. And then he heard them discussing what had happened in the Philadelphia shipyard, and that the woman said to the military man, and you know, we found one of those men on the ship embedded in a brick wall in... a brick wall in Italy. Now, that really got to the teenager, and he told my friend, he said, they acted like I was only a piece of wood. They didn't act like I was a human with ears, eyes. I was just a machine. But he said, I heard it distinctly. And so my friend telling me this story in Colorado said to me, what in the world do you think they were doing in the Philadelphia experiment that a whole human being could be somehow transported from the Philadelphia Naval Shipyard and be embedded in a wall, a brick wall, in Italy? Well, now we're into the whole huge question of magnetic fields, point-to-point transportation, and all these issues that come up in the UFO phenomena. And if our government was trying to fool around with, let's say, making a big ship invisible to radar, which that was the, I would say, the public explanation for whatever happened. They were trying to make the ship invisible to radar. What exactly were they beaming on that ship? I do not know. I've heard variations, but if we had that kind of an experiment back in the 40s, and we've been dealing with a phenomena that has all these craft and advanced technologies that we've been trying to back engineer. Maybe they didn't try that again ever the way they were trying then, because they knew that they couldn't control what happened to molecules that were being subjected to certain kinds of microwave or magnetic field manipulation. And do they know today how to do it any better? Question mark. Humans. So that's my address to the first. Pat Culligan, the huge 650-foot sphere with the white windows going around, these huge craft, sometimes cigar-shaped, sometimes spherical. They have been described for so long. They seem to be in some of the most ancient art, the same kind of thing, windows that are glowing, going around big, huge spheres in the sky in oil paintings. Are they a Greyhound bus from another solar system that comes here periodically to just see. I mean, that is one distinct possibility, that some of the big things could actually be carrying tourists. Or there is something about these big, huge craft that is related to certain cycles again on this planet that relate to the harvest of genetic material. That is another distinct possibility.
Very distinct possibility. Tim, in Alderwood, Washington, you're on with Linda Moulton Howe. Go ahead, Tim.
Okay, I think Linda's CIA, and I'm going to tell you why.
Okay, and then we'll let her respond.
Okay. These images in Ontario and in Texas, first of all, in Texas, Bruce McAfee looked at those images, MUFON looked at those images and determined them to be long exposures of a stationary object. But however, this one in Ontario, if you take a camera and put it in a long exposure, put it on a tripod and focus it on this could be a legitimate UFO in Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
If you focus it on an object in a long exposure and that object in the sky begins to move around, this is the kind of images you're going to get. It only takes a photography 101 class to understand that. They're not alien lettering. They're not alien hieroglyphs or messages or alien projections. This is just a UFO, legitimate UFO moving around. Why is he taking photographs in long exposure in the first place? Why doesn't he take a regular photograph and you won't see all these squirrely lines around in there? I mean, these are not, that's my point. Why do you
But I don't understand why you think she's with the CIA.
Well, it's misleading to mislead millions of people that these are alien messages, hieroglyphs in the sky, when she knows that this is an object in the sky moving around against taken by a camera using long exposure.
All right, but that still doesn't mean,
okay,
Tim, she's
George,
in the CIA. Hold on for a second. I'll let you get
George, there's not one word of any kind tonight of me talking about anything. And if you look at and read the three parts that I have put at Earth Files with great depth, with lots of interviews with people, including talking with people who make and study cameras, that we're talking about in the Kodak Easy Share, the time lapse is 1/2 a second. That's not long. He only did 2 30-second because he was seeing so much movement with his naked eye, as well as his neighbor, as well as friends at the coffee shop and others. They saw these things moving around. So he decided twice, this is now Greg Crane, to put his Kodak Easy Share on 30-second exposures for two images. Everything is laid out precisely in evolution, times, dates, and why. And in the motion that is in the 30-second frame, it does look like a gigantic pile of multicolored yarn. The other images, which make up the vast majority, are 1/2 second, because on his Kodak Easy Share camera, there are only limited options. It isn't like turning a high-end camera in terms of going to 1/25th, 1/60th, 1/30th, 1/15th, or whatever you want to do. He only has options that say, for example, to photograph a document with fine type or something like that. So we know from the computer in analyzing the images, all of which are in the Earth Files reports, the computer pieces that show what each of these images and these cameras are, that most of his images have been 1/2 a second. The professional photographer, Greg Crane, asked the professional photographer to bring his high-end equipment that was mounted on a sturdy tripod to try to take 3 or 4 different variations in different lengths of time just to see what would appear on these images. So why you, as a listener, would scramble everything that has been said and written and turn it into some kind of a bizarre, hysterical thing about CIA and misleading? I have no idea, because there's nothing in the Kitchener events, as they are being reported at earthfiles.com on Coast and Dreamland, that is anything but a reporter who is trying to find out, to the best of my ability, what would these triangular patterns of lights over Kitchener, Ontario, Canada be? What are they doing? And this man there is interested enough to keep photographing. And that's what's happening in Kitchener. Can we bring more scientific evidence to bear, meaning bringing in a team? Maybe. I do not know. But I personally resent your manipulation of what I'm reporting.
If anything, I think the CIA would be following you, Linda, don't you think? And they may have already. Let's go to Somerville, Massachusetts. Larry, you're up with us. Go ahead, Larry.
Yes. This thing has been haunting me for years. It's September 30th, 1976. My mother and I were on Route 111, and I seen a bright, glowing star ahead of us. I was in my vehicle, and I said, if you are what I think you are, come down, and it did.
How far down, Larry?
Pardon?
How far down did it come down?
It came right over the car and turned into a bright, from a bright star to a bat wing shaped vehicle. And there was no sound, exhaust, or nothing. So I drove into a one of these shopping centers, and all the stores were closed. This is around 10 p.m. And this occurred between 10 and 11 p.m. So I looked out the window of my car, and I get outside the car. There's nothing there but stars up in the sky. It was a good, bright, starry night. So I continued on to Route 111, and I said to my mother, I said, did you see what I just seen? She says, yes, I did. She says, I says, Ma, to my mother, I said, look, they're following us, it is following us over treetop level now. As a bright star, back again from a bat wing-shaped craft. So then I got to where we were going in Groton, Massachusetts, in front of a 42-room mansion to bring my sister what she wanted us to bring her. She had a room there. So my mother goes, what are you doing? I says, there's that star again. So I flashed up at the star with a flashlight. And it started to move to the left. I flashed again. It stopped. Then it came down over the highway, right down at the car. So I drove into the grounds of the 42-room mansion, and it was right outside the highway, and it appeared at least 100 feet in circumference over the highway. So I jumped out of the car. My mother begged me, where are you going? Don't leave me alone. And I had to block my eyes with my left arm because this bright, pulsating vehicle, whatever it was, or star, was right up over the highway. So
all right. In the essence of time, Larry, I got to move on. But I want to ask you, Linda, this is very close to the area in New Hampshire,
right,
where Barney and Betty Hill were abducted.
And this is about things that morph. And this morphing quality, I think one of the most important things that has happened to Greg Crane in Kitchener and his four other friends was the September 1993 event when they were all watching and saw what they thought was a yellow meteor. And out of the yellow meteor seemed to be deposited going at rapid speed, the nine black triangular craft, everything silent. That is another absolutely eerie insight into a phenomena that seems to be manipulating time and space in ways that are absolutely incomprehensible to us.
Something strange is going on, Linda. Always has been, but it just seems to be heating up even more now, doesn't it?
There's other intelligence in this universe, and our government knows it. Other governments know it. They've been keeping it a secret for 60 years because they didn't want to upend religions and money and all of that. And it seems to me the planet is imploding on its own. Things are changing rapidly at the human level, and it is way past time to have the truth about our real relationship with other beings and intelligences in the universe. I can't imagine why governments continue to say that there must be a policy of denial in the interest of national security when it's not national security, it's social imprisonment.
I remember when I was 15 talking to our teachers about why I believed there were many Earth-like planets in the universe, and that was without technology, without any knowledge of all this. And sure enough, look what's happening now. I mean, it doesn't take rocket science to realize that we're not alone in the universe.
And that one planet that they found 600 light years away, larger, but apparently might be a watery planet like Earth, bigger. And then they find they find two Earth-sized planets, but they're too hot. So they've got one 600 light years away that's probably pretty Earth-like, but bigger, and then they have found two that are the size of the Earth, but very hot. You know that just it's going to be right around the corner. They're going to find a planet in which they will detect water. It will be the size of the Earth. It will be 93 million miles from its yellow sun, and we will be looking at some kind of a neighbor.
And it'll be one of billions just like it. Linda, Merry Christmas to you, and thanks for everything you've done for us for the year. And for the past years, for Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasore, Timothy Benall, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.